Happy holidays from Supreme Master Television and Supreme Master Qinghai International Association.
Country rich in history and culture. Australia's natives, known as Aborigines, are believed to have travelled across the sea from Indonesia 70,000 years ago. Europeans arrived in the 16th century. The Portuguese were first, followed by the Dutch and the English. Australian wildlife has a reputation of being cute and cuddly animals. Some of these fascinating animals include kangaroos, koalas, possums, dingoes, and Tasmanian devils. Animals that are unique only to Australia are the adorable wombats, the large, flightless three-toed birds called emus, and kookaburras, members of the kingfisher family, and in fact are the world's largest kingfisher. Modern Australia is host to people from all over the world. Indeed, the country is home to some of the world's most talented people. In literature, the author Patrick White is a Nobel Prize winner, and fellow authors Peter Carey and Thomas Keneally are recipients of the famed Booker Prize. In opera, Dame Joan Sutherland is Australia's best-known diva. She was the undisputed coloratura soprano of her time. Nellie Melba was the world's biggest opera star at the beginning of the 20th century. In cinema, Australia is home to Oscar winners Mel Gibson, Russell Crowe and Nicole Kidman. Musically, the country has produced famous bands such as the Bee Gees, AC/DC, INXS and Midnight Oil. In 1993, Sincere Truth Seekers invited Supreme Master Qinghai to make a stopover during her 1993 World Lecture Tour to share her wisdom and insights about God and spirituality. Supreme Master Qinghai graciously accepted their invitation. She also met with our association members during her time there to discuss about spiritual topics and answer questions about their practice in daily life. Please join us on Between Master and Disciple today for the lecture, The Supreme Method to Liberation, delivered by Supreme Master Qinghai in Melbourne, Australia in March 1993.
Yesterday, we're supposed to stay in this house, yeah? But then we moved to another house just because you say the Vietnamese. Now you stay in a Vietnamese house, you don't stay in a Chinese house, yeah? Also, I told you, you are not Vietnamese, you are not Chinese, you are human beings. And Chinese, Vietnamese are only different, probably names for a different special room. Like you call this a living room. Right? It's also a room. And you go upstairs, a bedroom, it's also a room. Understand? You put a bed in it and you call it a bedroom. If you put a bed in here, you call this bedroom as well. And move the living room upstairs. It's the same thing. Understand? So Chinese, Vietnamese is just because of different background. The society, the name of our bodies and our nation is not the name of our true heritage. Yes. So, and then I had to move down there for one day just because the Vietnamese owner cries so much. Yes. But I ask you, am I an antiquitate or something that I have to move from one room, place to another just to let people feel pleased with it? Understand? Anywhere I stay is all right. If you argue too much, and I will stay in a hotel. And then Chinese house empty, Vietnamese house also empty. Understand? Yes. Everywhere I stay is all right. As long as it's convenient for you, the people, to come to see me, and the room is large enough. So accordingly, we do things together. Don't ever discriminate. Also, therefore, I also don't want to wear the so-called non-tradition anymore. Our disciples came from different religions, and I don't advocate a Buddhist alone, right? And I don't change Catholic into Buddhist. People who love to hear the truth, they will come. Yes. I don't need to be attached to any kind of outer appearance to prove to you that I'm holy, I'm better than you, I am practicing and you are not, etc. Right? It's not necessary, right? Maybe it was necessary that I wear nun's clothes before. Maybe it's necessary now I wear different clothes. Okay? At different time we do different things. Right? Yes. I was in Taiwan and people always cling to Buddhism. Yeah? So everything is speaking mostly in Buddhist terminology. But I don't need to do like that when I go out. Right? I speak to the Westerner in terms of Christianity because they understand it better. So we always have to be flexible in everything we do. That's why we obey the Master. Just because we want to train to be flexible. Understand what I mean? Not because any Master is so dictative. And whatever Master say to you, you have to do it. It's not true so. It's not true. Because our mind is so fixed in one direction or another that the Master has great difficulty to break it apart. Understand? And then to retrain us again to become very supple, yeah, and easy to manage. So that's why most of the time, the Zen master or the master of old, sometimes they do something very sudden, or shout into your head, make you break your own thinking. Understand? Yes. Only when we truly, explicitly obey a master, then our mind become already very soft, and we can deal with all circumstances in true justice and not with preconceived ideas, understand, prejudice, because we're so used to with, how say, flexibility, so used to with all kind of sudden change, we're so used to with immediate action, spontaneous action, not preconceived action, understand? That's the best way. Now for example, everybody say to you, oh, the water is very dangerous, don't jump in there, you get wet, and you get probably drowned. But once we train all the time already, we took a few cup of water, but then later, we are not afraid of water anymore. When we jump into water, we know what to do, right? Just because we have trained ourselves in a new habit. Everything is a habit. For example, like Milarepa's master, huh? And the Milarepa, he killed a lot of people before he came by black magic. So his master teach him not to kill. Yeah. And then don't use the black magic anymore. That he knows. But when his master teach him to kill, why does he have to do that? Because now he was so attached to this one point, one direction, one way street. Understand? So the master, knowing that these person are going to die anyhow, understand, these making trouble for his disciples and other village, they're going to die anyhow, so just send him there, so-called kill him. But it's not the true killing, understand? Only the master can say that. Other people cannot do that, but only in exceptional case, understand? Just like an Indian philosopher, Bhagavad Gita, the master Krishna told Arjuna, his disciple, it's okay when you are in battle, you have to kill. Because these people will die anyhow. At that time, they die, whether you kill them or not. Understand? Therefore, there's no karma, no truly killing. Understand? So just like in Buddha, when Buddha was alive, he allowed some of his disciples to eat meat. But then when people ask them, then why we cannot eat meat? And later, the disciple in the future, when after you die, can they eat meat? They say, no. This meat are my magical power to give them. So they are not truly meat. Because these people were in special case, or maybe sick or something like that, or just come and don't know, not yet used to with vegetarian. So he gave them special meat, but only at that time. Later, nobody is allowed to eat meat anymore. Understand? They don't make excuse on that. Just like other disciples of Mabha, Milarepa's teacher, he didn't allow them to kill. Understand? Also, Milarepa never killed again later. Understand what I mean? Only in the circumstances. Just because he wanted to break Milarepa into pieces and then reveal him again in a new shape, more useful tool for the supreme power. Understand what I mean? But these are some shocking, exceptional cases. And not every master uses that, and not that every circumstance we should use it. Mostly, the master will avoid this drastic measure to teach the disciples. But just Milarepa is so different, and Arjuna is so different. You understand? Therefore, Jesus don't tell people to kill. His disciple did not need it. A Buddha doesn't need to teach his disciple to kill, because they don't need it, or they cannot bear it. Understand? It's a different circumstances. Sometimes some of the monks in Taiwan ask me if they can do service to the dead and get money out of it. I say no. But they recite the sutras, yeah, for the dead people and all that. And I say, it's better not. Don't do it. Better not. But when the Korean monks ask me if they can do it, I say, yes, you can. It's not that I'm contradicting myself. A different mentality. Understand? The Korean people, they were sincerely reciting. These monks who asked me, they were sincerely wanting to help these people. And their life is very simple. They don't take money for it. So I say, okay. But for those monks who asked me in Taiwan, they were not sincere to help people. They just do it blindly and get the money for it and thinking it's a right to do so. Understand? So I say, no. Therefore, we learn the way of wisdom is that the way of flexibility. Yeah? Learn to use your intuitive understanding for every dealings in life as well as in heaven. That's why we need to learn. Not that we don't know already. We know enough. But we don't know how to use it in the correct time. Therefore, it doesn't seem right. Our life is not smooth. And we feel sometimes obstacle in our heart, or we feel our conscience is biting on us. Yeah? Not that a practitioner throw away everything in this world and just become a monk and sitting in a cave. For that you will not become Buddha. If it's not your destiny to do so, you will not. If it is, yes. Therefore, a monk who sit in a cave in Himalaya is not better than a household who struggle every day in life to earn livelihood for his family and doing the same practice at home. You understand what I mean? When this man, very famous, Yogananda, he was asking Master whether he should go into the Himalaya cave and practice there. And the Master asked him, do you have an attic in your house? I mean the loft room? He said, yes, I have. So the master say, go up there every day, that's your Himalaya cave. Yes, therefore each one is different, you see. Therefore some master is sitting in the Himalaya, but Yogananda, for example, going all over the world and teach people to practice at home. Yeah, understand what I mean? And Buddha was not always sitting in the Himalaya cave, but go around 49 years and teaching people how to become Buddha at home. So is Jesus. Understand what I mean? So never mind about the Himalaya. Yeah? If you are sincerely practice, you attain the same hate. Okay? We never should feel attached to anything, whether it is a cave, a Himalaya mountain, or a Himalaya river, or a monk's clothes, or a jinn. If you should put the jinn down, you put it down. You put a monk robe down, you put it down. The path inside is monkhood. Understand? Our not attachment to the world, to possession, and to this ephemeral life, that is monkhood. Yeah? Not necessary to wear anything to make people suspicious or worship. Yes. Anything that you don't understand or you don't agree with me, please tell me. Yeah. Not because you have to absolutely obey the master, now you dare not speak even.
Master, if we are asked what our religion is.
Yes.
What shall we
tell? Oh my God. I also don't know how to tell you. What do you think? What did you answer them?
Buddhism.
It's you who call yourself Buddhist. Yeah, all right, you are also Buddhist. It's true. If you are the Buddhist before you met me, then you say you're Buddhist. If you're Catholic before you met me, you say you're Catholic. If you're Protestant before you met me, you say you're Protestant. That's finished. Okay? Answer to your religion if you feel that way. If not, you just say, our teaching just do not advocate any particular religion, because religions are so many already in the world. And it's already teach people how to do good, to behave themselves. So our master already teach us to get direct with the source of all religion. All right? Yes. Yes. Right. If we are Buddhist, then we stay Buddhist. If we are Catholic, our master say, you stay Catholics. Understand? Our master don't advocate one religion on top of another. In Indonesia, a reporter also asked me similar question. He say, why do you say all religions are good? Yeah, what's the meaning of this? Since you were brought up as Buddhist and Christian, why do you say all religions are good? So I say, so what do you think? Do you mean, do you tell me that I should tell people or to teach people that Buddhist is better than Catholic or Catholics better than Muslim, and then they fight with each other or what? And so he didn't know how to answer. He said, yes, that's right, that's right, that's right. Understand? In the name of religion, we have so much bloodshed already, and so much division among people. Right? So we don't want anymore. It's better that each one follow his own religion, and we respect all of them, and help them to get in touch with their founder of the religion, or with their, God Almighty, or their Buddhas. Yes, because, and then they will know all of them are one. Right? Mm. It's not that all people who believe in religion are like that. It's just that sometimes people misunderstand the religious teaching and then make so much discrimination. Yeah? Mm. Therefore, after you have get initiation, and you have realized that it's all right to be Buddhist or Christian. You know it. We don't need to name that we have any religion. Understand? But we are very religious. Now, for example, if you say you are Buddhist, that's fine, because you truly keep the five precepts, and you eat vegetarian, right? The Buddhists advocate, charity, and keep the precept, and be enduring and patient, and practice diligently every day, meditate, yeah, and have wisdom. So now you have all these six. So you can say truly you are Buddhist. But look at Christianity. After initiation, what do you get? All the precepts in the Bible, you keep or not? Love thy neighbor, don't tell lie, and what? No adultery, no stealing, right? And what not? Huh? No killing, even no killing? Yes, you are vegetarian. Understand? You don't kill even small animals. so you're a true Christian or not. And then also in the Bible say, look, seek you first the kingdom of God and all the things shall be added unto you. You have found your kingdom. So that you are the true Christian or not. God that who appears like light in the Bible, you have seen. You've seen the light. God that speaks in the voice of thunder and many water, you hear. So you have seen the kingdom of God. Now you're true Christian. Understand? So I only teach you to be true Christian, true Buddhist, and true Muslim or true whatever your religion happens to be. There's no need to say you're not Buddhist or you're not Christian after you follow me. You are truly Christian. If you want to say what religion you are, you have, you can say I'm a true Christian. I'm a true Buddhist. Whatever you choose to say. All right?
When you achieve the true non-egoistic nature, does it mean that we achieve the Buddhahood? We really see our Buddhahood?
Nearly. Yes, nearly. You might slip up and down again. But after a long period of practicing, you're stable in Buddhahood. Yes. You are one with the Master. That means you become the Master, you're the Buddha, yes. But not always, because once you achieved it, it doesn't mean you can always hold it, understand? So we need a longer practice, yes. You know how to operate. You became a surgeon, right? You have practiced with your other master doctors, and you know how to operate. But sometimes your skill is not yet stable, so you have to practice harder. Understand? And after have a doctor degree, you still have to practice further. And the more you practice, the more stable and the more skillful you become. All right? So, in the case of Radha, the story I have told you, this has another part of it. You want to hear? Okay. In relating to this question, Radha, being so devoted and selfless to the Master, of course, got a lot of love and attention, special attention from the Master as well. Therefore, she had for some time became conceited, arrogant. Yes, and she felt that she's okay, she's high, and she's better than the rest. And also the Master loved her so much, and she enjoyed the love of the Master, so she became kind of possessive. She thinks the Master belonged to her alone. Well, I had this experience with some of my attendants as well. You know, therefore I learn better than Krishna. I don't use same attendant all the time. I change. Yeah. So anyhow, in that case of Radha, the Master probably one day had enough of it, Krishna. So he decided to teach her a lesson. One day he told her very secretly and lovingly, romantically, say, "Oh, I'm fed up with all these people. Why don't we both go together in some places alone? I only trust you." Yeah. So, wow, she feels, that's it. That's the thing I want to hear. You belong to me alone. Then we have good time together. That's best. So immediately she follow him. And then Krishna keep walking and walking all the time in a high and deep mountain and river, and so very difficult way to walk. And Radha get exhausted and say, "I can't walk anymore. Why don't you stop?" And then Krishna say, no, we're near there. Keep walking." So Radha eventually cannot walk anymore. So Krishna say, "Oh, so what do you want me to do? Carry you?" She say, "Yes, of course, you carry me." Yeah. She's so used to it being spoiled, you understand? And she thinks the Master belongs to her just like an ordinary husband. So she can do what she wants with him and get away with it, or using him just like an ordinary human being. Understand? So Krishna pretended to agree with her. So I said, "Okay, come." And want to carry her on his back. But as soon as she jumped up on him, he disappeared. So she fell flat on the ground, bleeding nose. Her flat nose became flatter. And then she sat there and cried. And then she realized that she has been wrong. She knows he is not the body. And she should not be possessive and get hold of his body like her own possession or something that she could own. Before she apologized to the master and said, "I am very wrong. I was wrong. I have been wrong. Please forgive me. I understand now. I should not possess you. I should respect you and only help you unconditionally without any request for reward of myself." Because if she doesn't do that, she harms the master. She ties the master down and also affects numerous sentient beings who follow him. Understand? And he will always have to spend time with her alone and do all her whims to please her, just like an ordinary husband. Then how can he have time for other people? Understand? So he has to be in control. Otherwise, she controls him. That's how most of people are tied down in this world and forgot their greatness.
Joining us today on Between Master and Disciples. Please tune in tomorrow for part 3 of The Supreme Method to Liberation. Coming up next is Mysteries and Wonders of the Ocean on Animal World, Our Co-Inhabitants. Please stay tuned to Supreme Master Television.